It's been more than 20 years that this show has been going, and it started as a monthly call-in show with the governor of Alaska. And today, we've got a call-in show with the governor of Alaska. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. To join a conversation with Governor Sean Parnell, the number statewide and toll-free is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. Governor Sean Parnell is our guest today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Providence Imaging Center, helping cancer patients stay in Anchorage with a PET scanner that fuses anatomical and functional images since 2004. Learn more at provimaging.com. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has studied regional population, household, and employment statistics to forecast future traffic and revenue models for the Kinnick Arm Crossing. The authority is updating this data and commissioning an independent peer review of the work that's been completed so far. The results are expected in fall 2013. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, our telephone number, to repeat, is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk at alaskapublic.org. Governor Sean Parnell has just walked into the door, made his way to the depths of the campus area, the UMed district, and we're way back in the woods. But he found us. Governor, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be with you. And boy, there's a lot of activity in the UMed district here in Anchorage. And it's amazing. Lots of construction, lots of people. It's wonderful to see.
The streets aren't where they used to be.
No, things are changing.
Yeah, they are. I mean, the giant sports arena has pretty well gone up now.
Yeah.
And Elmore has got a roundabout or something there. I haven't even been through that one yet, but I guess that one just reopened. Yeah. So it's good to have you back.
Thank you.
You are, the last time you were on Talk of Alaska, you had taken office not too long before.
Is that right? Uh-huh. That's been a long time then.
Indeed. And it was, among the things that we discussed was, what's the third floor going to be like with you, you know, as governor, because you were in the legislature before and you assured us that the third floor is going to be very present. And that has happened.
Yeah. You know, there's been a consistent working relationship with the third floor and legislators and, you know, bumps in the road along the way. But certainly I understand the kind of the motivations and the workings of the legislature and I work together with them as best I can to, move Alaskans forward.
And the other thing that really sticks in my memory of that conversation is when you said the word jobs, your eyes lit up. and when we would bring up an issue, like would it be mining or fishing, or would, and you say jobs, Alaskans, we can keep our kids here.
Yeah. Well, it's work provides dignity and meaning to humans. And when you can't find work and you can't find a job, you can't support your family. And there's a lot of ramifications to that. So we focused, during my administration, we focused on policies to grow Alaska's economy, to grow those opportunities. And I think by doing that, we've strengthened Alaska families and got a lot of work left to do, but certainly we've made some good progress.
Well, we're certainly still stalled on the mining front. Some of it's the price of gold and nervousness of the investment community. Some of it might be laid to the regulatory climate. But, you know, the obvious one to talk about would be Pebble, and I'm sure we'll go there. I'm sure the listeners will go there. But let's take another one. Let's take the road to Ambler.
Yeah.
And the rich deposit of copper that's up there just kind of waiting for, you know, that some way of transporting that ore.
Well, I look at jobs across the industries of Alaska and across the small businesses of Alaska. So whether it's oil and gas, whether it's mining, whether it's fish, timber, whether it's the support services as well, It's all about creating an environment where more money will make its way to Alaska to provide Alaska jobs. And so when you talk about the road to Ambler, certainly that's one way to create opportunity is by building a new road in conjunction with the communities that are impacted by that.
Well, in that case, the residents are and the calls are starting to come in. The telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. And I don't want to be the one asking all the questions, and I'm sure I won't be. But the thing about the Ambler Mining District is that that would be an underground mine, at least the main prospect,
yeah.
the one that's most forward. And we now see a situation where the remaining industry major involved with the Pebble Partnership says they would only support an underground mine. Does this feel like forward movement to you?
Well, again, my job was to make sure that we had a permitting process that worked. Obviously, that permitting process, you know, was never in fact, it appears to me that the Pebble mine, as it was known before, is no more. At least not in the near term, and so that's not an issue, frankly, that our agency or I will spend a lot of time with, because again, it's about making sure our permitting processes work, making sure we can create jobs for Alaskans in a whole host of ways, including mining.
Okay, well, if you're ready for some calls, they're going to come from all over the state.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm sure you remember.
Oh, of course.
Let's go to line one from Delta, where Shelley joins the program. Shelley, you're on Talk of Alaska with Governor Sean Parnell.
Hi, thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, Governor, I heard you just say that your administration's biggest focus was to create jobs in Alaska, but it seems like your biggest focus has been to sue the federal government and reduce oil taxes for big oil companies. And we found that the tourism rate of the state has been flat this year. So there's no jobs, excess jobs created in that department or in the oil industry and things like that. I guess I would like you to ask you to spend less time and state resources suing the federal government and really truly focus on jobs for Alaskans.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the comment and certainly have a different view of things. One of the first things that I did coming into office was work to assure that more tourists spent more dollars in Alaska businesses. We lowered the head tax, we streamlined permitting, we increased our advertising dollars for Alaska marketing when it comes to tourism marketing. I came into office just after the 2008-2009 crash in tourism. We've seen more cruise ships come back. Those cruise ships send more people this direction. We have more independent travelers than we did when we started. The bottom line is they're spending more money in Alaska businesses. When you talk about the oil and gas industry, I had just 2 days ago a conversation with an individual who said, and he's involved as an attorney doing working for smaller oil companies. He said, I have never in the 20 years that I've been doing business here and working here, I've never seen so much activity and new investment and new confidence in Alaska. And he said, starting with Cook Inlet 3 years ago, when the legislature and I teamed together to create tax benefits to bring a jackup rig or jackup rigs here, we had people talking about importing Canadian gas just last fall. And now we have we had exploration wells this last year. We had new finds announced and to be announced on the North Slope. Talk about small businesses. I was just in Homer this summer, talked to an air taxi operator who flies tourists around Kachemak Bay to view the beautiful scenery there. And he thanked me because he said for the first time, he's going to be taking his planes from Homer to Dead Horse for winter work because there's so much work up there. I just spoke with another business owner who is investing in a 22,000 square foot shop on the North Slope with new work, a welding shop in North Pole, the same thing. This notion that somehow new jobs have not been created and are not created just is false. And the proof really is not just today, but the proof will be 5 years from now, 10 years from now, as not only these new jobs have been produced, new oil has been produced, new revenues for the state and for her people.
Shelley and Delta, I know you have a difficult situation there, and I'd like to press the governor on it a little bit. And that is, as you probably know, Governor, Holland America is deciding to fly up to Dawson instead of run them through on the buses, and that for Delta, for the tourist visitor facilities in Delta are hard-pressed. They don't know what they're going to do.
Well, and I fully appreciate that, and I understand that that hurts. You know, my parents owned a small store here in Anchorage when Costco came in, and Costco could sell a case of paper for less than my parents could buy at wholesale for. And so I understand how that hits households and homes, and it hits the pocketbook, it hits in our ability to make a living. At the same time, to make broad sweeping statements about how nothing is being done about jobs is a little overbroad. I think Delta also has another serious issue, and it's the drop in agriculture this summer. They're not only hurting in tourism, they're hurting when it comes to the crop. And I had a conversation yesterday with Representative Eric Feige. He raised the issue with me, and that's something else we're looking at is whether there are economic disaster possibilities to be declared in the area when it comes to the lesser crop. So I fully appreciate and understand that our people are still hurting in various areas, but at the same time, I will remain focused on creating jobs and addressing those issues.
Shelley?
Well, one of the main things, too, I think, is not necessarily related to jobs. It's just like I said, I think there's way too much state resource spent on suing the federal government or trying to, attack the Affordable Health Care Act, to not give extended benefits to people for Medicare. This is state money. Nobody in the state pays an income tax to the state. But that money in the coffers is state money, and it's being spent not for the benefit of the people, but to sue the federal government. So.
All right, Shelley. I'm going to take that. Yeah, I'm going
to
take that as more of a comment than a question, because he's just going to have to basically defend, and I'm sure other people will raise some of those concerns. Shelley, I want to thank you so much for your call from Delta.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you very much, and we'll move to Kodiak and Dennis. You're on the air with Governor Sean Parnell now.
Good morning, Governor. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
I think it's very commendable of you coming on Talk of Alaska, our local Jay Barrett, for a promo. Reminded us what Steve's capable of doing with governors in his hands. Anyway, public servants, you get around probably more than most people in Alaska. Public servants, is it just in Kodiak that they're getting rarer and rarer, or is that a trend statewide?
That public servants are getting rarer and rarer?
Is this about unions, or what is this, Dennis?
This is about old borough assembly members, local...
Civic spirit and like that?
Exactly. It is unbelievable how such a healthy economy like Kodiak, the rarest thing on this archipelago are public servants, service board members. In the last 18 years, there's probably been about four uncontested borough assembly elections. It's mind-boggling. It really is.
You know, one of those issues that I think you've raised an interesting point and a valid one. I remember the day when, thankfully I had a functional and healthy family relationship with my mom and dad. We had dinner together every night with my brother and I, and they spoke to the nobility of public service and about living beyond ourselves for the benefit of others. And in those dinners, I don't think that public service is held up as a noble calling, and it ought to be, but it's not. I do want to say congratulate the public servants in Kodiak and the community of Kodiak for doing something really well, and that is delivering education through digital means. You know, our daughter, one of our daughters, had to take an Alaska Studies course like many high schoolers here, and she took it online, and it was the most boring piece of study that I think she took. I mean, it was basically, you know, typewritten pages, single space, read the text, take the test, and it was provided by an outside university. She got her credits, you know, she graduated. But we can do better than that. In Kodiak, along with, for instance, the University of Alaska Southeast, Northwest Arctic Borough, as well as starting up as well, Kodiak provides some of the best teachers and instruction through digital learning, which is real-time interface with students in multiple communities. So a teacher stands in front of cameras and in front of computer screens, teaches courses, and interacts with kids in different communities. And this puts teachers in qualified, highly competent teachers in subjects into classrooms that wouldn't otherwise have them. And I think that's a beauty of what some of the public servants in Kodiak have done and accomplished.
Dennis?
Well put. Hey, thank you for the opportunity, and hope to meet you someday soon.
You bet. Thank you.
Hey, Dennis, I think you're doing pretty good on energy, too, with that hydro project, one of the best in the state.
Yeah, it's great photo ops.
Well, the combination of the hydro and wind turbines, they're one of the models for renewable energy in the state.
You bet. Yeah, thanks for your call from Kodiak, Dennis.
Thank you.
And Peggy joins the show from Kodiak also. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Governor Sean Parnell. Peggy?
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, Governor, I just have a question about the Choose Respect campaign. I was at the ball when you came over during the inauguration, and it was pretty interesting, but I have a question, sir, and it's very important to me and a lot of people in the state. And it's about domestic violence, okay? So when you are involved in a domestic violence in this state, do you know that the rule currently is between the victim and the perpetrator, and I know it goes both ways, both men can be victims and women, but the perpetrator is allowed access to their weapons until the 20-day hearing is held. Now, we have a women's resource center here, and there's some great ones all over the state, and I know they just had their conference up in Fairbanks, and this is of great concern. Now, no one wants to take anybody's guns away permanently, but in domestic violence, sir, and I'm pretty sure you already know this, it's the number one incident where women are murdered and men. Police don't like them because it's also the number one killer of them. Courts don't like them because they're also the number one reason courtrooms get shot up. But if we could simply change the law, and it would be simple to know weapons are secured by both parties. Now, I'm not saying the cops have to take them, but they will be secured. Now, I'm not asking much, but I'm pleading for you to take the stroke of the pen and change this. It would be much appreciated. It's simple. You're not going to get any guff from the gun advocates. I guarantee you that, because everybody knows that it needs to be done, and it's only on a temporary basis unless they prove they are not worthy. And we have to start doing something, Governor. We have to. Too many of our people, especially our children, you know, we've got to do something. Now, no one loves guns more than me, trust me. But we have to use common sense, Governor. I appreciate you, and choose respect. Let's get this done. Can we do that?
I appreciate hearing from you, and certainly you've raised that difficult issue. My focus has been on getting the victims and survivors of domestic violence out of those situations, into shelters, and then into housing and jobs outside of those situations. And you're really asking for something that requires a legislative solution, something that I cannot, by the stroke of a pen, change. But I appreciate very much you raising the issue with me and making me more aware of it.
Peggy? Okay, thank you, Peggy. Let's talk of Alaska. And one thing I admire about this program with public officials on it in an hour-long format, there's always a surprise like that.
Hmm.
there's always something that you didn't quite expect.
Well, that's the beauty of speaking with the public is you actually there are some new things you can learn or new ways that you are exposed to in terms of thinking that help in our service. So that's part of why elected officials need to be accessible and responsive like this.
I couldn't agree more. Let's go to Homer and Joanne. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Governor Sean Parnell. Joanne.
Hi. Governor, I've been somebody who's worked really hard all my life. Most of my jobs have been at or near minimum wage, though. And after I ended up divorced, supporting my daughter, and disabled, I ended up on Social Security disability. Now, that's based on the wages that you've earned in your life. And in the state of Alaska, luckily, if you don't make enough to support your kid on your disability, you get a little bit of help from the state. But that help from the state that helps you support your kid on disability, it hasn't been going up. In the last 8 or 10 years, I've been getting my Social Security disability adjusts up with the cost of living, and my state supplement adjusts down so that I don't get any more than I had before. And, you know, for most stuff, I can understand that, but the cost of fuel and food has been going up, and my kid's not eating any less. And my home doesn't have to be kept any less warm to keep her warm enough. And I was wondering if it's possible to get at least a food and energy adjustment on the supplemental benefits so that the poorest of the kids aren't hungry or suffering just because inflation has been going up in the past 10 years and benefits haven't.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that description of real life. And I got to tell you, on a question like that, where I do not personally know the ins and outs of the supplemental benefit program, what I would ask you to do is contact our Juneau office at 907-465-3500. Ask to speak with Mike Lessman, who is my special assistant for health and social services. And if you would describe to him what we've talked about here, he would be happy, and our office would be happy to check into what is available, and then what could be done down the road. That's something that we could certainly work through Health and Social Services or through the Office of the Governor. But that is typically what I would need to do is have additional research done in the office to help me understand better the ins and outs of the program as you experience them on the ground in Kodiak.
What's going on, though, is that for people on temporary assistance and stuff like that, the benefits have not gone up in 10 years.
Okay, I'm going to try and make that more general, Joanne, and I would thank you for describing the situation. That's an excellent call.
Okay, thank you.
But, Governor, I know you're fiscally conservative. Mm-hmm. But we saw it on the issue of education. Now we're seeing it on the issue of social benefits, inflation indexing, maybe on the minimum wage. You're just pretty much against it.
So that's not a true statement.
Okay.
If you look at the budgets for those areas, both for education and for health and social services, they've gone up, and they will continue to go up. What the caller is addressing is that an individual benefit or an individual benefit or two benefits that they receive are not inflation adjusted and are not going up. And that's the crux of the matter is should we put government programs on autopilot with formulas as we do, and should they contain inflation adjustments? And what that really does is it takes the program out of the scrutiny of the legislature from a policy perspective, because they just check the box and say, okay, we're on automatic pilot, and they don't even look at it for the year. We can't go back to the pure system where it's a straight appropriation every year, because and I'm kind of coming back to this policy discussion of whether you have formulas or whether you just make a straight appropriation after evaluating how many people are on it, what the needs are, et cetera. Formula programs are shortcuts for the legislature to try to treat everybody in a particular category with a measure of equality while still maintaining some budget restraint or oversight. So it's a balance. It's not you're against this or not. It's a bigger picture than just that kind of a comment.
But, okay. So I would refine it down then. That I would characterize it then with you don't want automatic.
Right. So for example, with education, with a formula, there's no inflation adjustment for the formula, but we have increased the BSA, the base student allowance in the early years of my administration. That was something that Governor Palin set in motion. We also then increased by $25 million the heating adjustment, which had the effect of increasing the BSA. So it wasn't an automatic, you know, inflation adjustment, but it had that effect, which put more money in the classrooms than would have been there. So there are different ways to come at it, and we choose different ways through the public policy and through the process. Yeah.
Sean Parnell, Governor of Alaska, is our guest on Talk of Alaska. The telephone number 1-800-478-8255 statewide, 550-8422, a local call in Anchorage. Email is talk@alaskapublic.org. Only two email messages so far, but a big stack of calls here. And before we take the break, I think it's time to put this one in on, because we're already on this fiscal and spending issue, and that is the Medicaid expansion.
Yeah.
If you were assured that it wasn't going to cost the state down the line,
of course, 40,000 people that would have health insurance. Okay, well, of course that'd be an easy call. It'd be an easier call for sure. But let's kind of look at the big picture again. This is where I come back to. The state already provides health insurance for 225,000 of our 710,000 residents, approximately. Okay, so let's get the bigger picture, that the state already provides health coverage with Medicaid and employees and retirees, already provides health coverage for a substantial portion of Alaskans. Our experience with Medicaid has been that the federal government has cut its increased contribution. We had a reduction in what's called FMAP just in the last 2 years. So they said you're gonna get 60%, and then it went to 50%. The history there is that when the federal government's in trouble, they slice it and then it falls to the states to take it on. The Medicaid expansion is an annual decision that can be made by a governor. So right now, if I said as a policy, our state would like to expand Medicaid, I would make that budget request in December, and then I'd have to get legislative approval to expand Medicaid. So it would require both the governor and the legislature to do it. I would have to be convinced that it is in Alaskans' interests to do it. And so far, the case has not been made to me that it's in Alaskans' interest to put Alaskans at financial risk like that. So I've told everybody I'll maintain an open mind, show me the numbers, how they work and why they work. And we've already seen indications that the federal government will not keep their word. I believe they will under President Obama. I'm concerned about the successive years because I believe that he will make his signature program whole while he's in office. I think that's a priority of the Obama administration. Those priorities shift and change over time, and the federal government's history over time is programs get cut and other programs get added, and we don't have that assurance, Steve.
Fair enough. Today, there's a hearing in Washington that happened already. I guess that Senator Bigetz was trying to get Walmart in there and a bunch of fishermen about the sustainability labeling issue. And I just wanted to get you to kind of weigh in on this because everybody else has.
Well, and we've taken a strong stand that Alaska's fisheries are managed for sustainability. It's part of our constitution. It's also mandated by the Magnuson-Stevens Act. I had our fisheries, my Office of the Governor Fisheries Advisor, Stephanie Moreland, testify at that hearing. I have her prepared testimony in front of me, but effectively she makes the case that the MSC certification, the eco-labeling, has become more about access and control of fisheries and access to markets than it is about sustainability of fisheries. That's not to say that the MSC label is you know, forever tainted, but what it is, what it says is that Alaskan fish should not be judged by a private label that's a pay-to-play kind of label. Instead, we have government structures in place to assure that our fish are sustainable and that our sources of fish are sustainable. So, I applaud Senator Begich. I applaud Senator Murkowski, frankly, as well, for making sure that the federal government is going to buy Alaska fish, even when it doesn't contain the MSC label, because you know some of our seafood processors didn't pay to play with the MSC label, but instead we have gotten our own sustainability certification system in place.
It does seem that the MSC is kind of inscrutable on this.
But and the criteria changes over time. Yeah. And when the criteria changes, it's a moving set of goalposts that, and frankly, they allow lower class, and by lower class, I mean lower, from a scientific basis, a lower level of fishery to qualify because they, for their label, which actually diminishes the market view of our wild Alaska seafood, for example.
Well, I'm sure we'll get back to salmon as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
We've got 24 minutes left. Governor Sean Parnell is our guest. I mentioned that there weren't many emails, and they immediately stacked up. Every phone line in the place is now tied up. Governor, you're popular.
Oh, well, it's good to hear from your listeners.
Yeah, well, we have one. This is from Carly. Carly is a, I think, a set netter on the other side of the inlet and is very worried about a Chewitna coal mine and says, didn't you say you won't trade one resource for another? I'm sure you've heard this before.
Yeah, I have, and I won't. And I've seen the written kind of misinformation about what's actually happened with Chewitna and a decision that was made on a proposal to basically stop any permitting and stop any activity. There's been no decision to allow a Chewitna mine to go forward. Certainly, it can a company can work the permitting process and the public process, but until such time as that's allowed to play out. I don't know what else to say except my job is to make sure that the public has access to that process, that they have input, the science is there, and then that the department makes a good decision. And we're not anywhere close to that at this point.
How about the water reservation issue?
So that's an important one. We are the only state in the union that allows effectively a private party to tie up water from other parties. And the only way that I think to constitutionally really have a process where everybody has a say in the water is for a government entity to hold those water reservations, not private entities. And so that's one of the reasons why we move forward with legislation to accomplish that.
One more from the email. This one from Jay, and I know there's a lot of concern all down the Aleutian chain. I mean, the Tustamina has been a real problem this summer, a real inconvenience, and So the outcry is, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to replace it or what? It's taken forever to fix it. Everybody has had all these plans, and you know how it is in summer. Summer is short in Alaska.
It is.
And they're blown out of the water, essentially. You're left with air or the barge, if you planned on the barge. And what can we do? And the suggestion from Jay here in Homer is, well, how about a new ferry, Governor? Would you support such a thing?
Well, I already have, so let's be clear about that.
He also has $220 million. I don't know where he gets that from. But
So a couple things. One is that I fought early in my administration to make sure that we had ferry service to the Aleutians and funding for that, particularly in that May to August, May to September timeframe for additional service. This year, when the Testamina went into dry dock in Seward, there were delays, in my estimation, my own estimation, because of poor workmanship. That didn't pass, the work product did not pass inspection, so there were delays. That has been resolved, but we're heading in, or close to being resolved, we're heading into sea trials. We expect it to be in service, I believe, by October 26th. And that is a date that has been communicated to the communities, and the changes have had to be made to accommodate that. Something outside the state's control, but something we certainly have been challenged with.
So this new vessel, this is a Gulf Crossing vessel?
Okay, so there are a couple vessels at work here.
Yeah.
The first set was there's $120 million that has been appropriated and that I signed off on, which is building two day boats for the Juneau Haines Skagway area. There's been another, I believe, $40 million set aside for a larger, I believe it's for an ocean going class ferry. That's not enough to finish it, but it is enough to design it and get working on it, which has occurred. So it's going to take further appropriations for the next ferry to come. And that's not an answer for, you know, this fall. And DOT, Alaska Marine Highway System, is working to address those shorter term issues as well.
Okay, let's go down to Bethel and John. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Governor Sean Parnell. John.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Governor, my opinion is that you screwed every Alaskan by your oil tax statements.
Do you want an answer, or what? Is that a statement? Tell me.
Yeah.
I would love an answer. I would love an answer. Why did you do that?
Well, because we were guaranteed decline on the previous path we were on, and now we have a shot at opportunity for more Alaskans. It's a different view of the world, but we were on a path to continued oil production decline when Texas, North Dakota, their decline had turned to incline or increase. We had to look around and say, why is that? And it was because at high oil prices, we were not competitive for that investment. And let me put it this way. If you got $100 and you have a bank in town that'll pay you 1% return on your savings, and you have another bank that'll pay 2% interest on your savings, you're going to put it where you get 2% interest. That's the same thing with any company, whether it's oil or a welding shop. They're going to put their money where it makes money. And we now have a situation where, as I said earlier in the program, we have work coming to Alaska. We have dollars, billions of dollars now coming to Alaska that was not coming before. And this is because of the SB 21 More Alaska Production Act changes that have been made. So we can look at Cook Inlet and say, here's how it works. 3 years ago, more tax benefits were given for Cook Inlet. No exploratory work was being done at the time in Cook Inlet. We had, I think, 5 exploratory wells drilled. We had one company that committed $100 million worth of investment when in prior years, Conoco, Marathon, Unocal, together hadn't even been investing that much in the inlet. So in the last 3 years in Cook Inlet, we've seen a renaissance. We no longer are talking about having people talk about importing gas because we have more gas now and more jobs available in the inlet. We have new activity on the North Slope. That means not only new jobs for Alaskans, that means new revenue for Alaskans in the years to come. That's my view. I wanted to take us off that guaranteed decline curve, or at least give us a shot at opportunity.
John?
Sir, I would like to say lies, lies, and damn lies.
Well, I'm sorry you feel that way, but we obviously just have a little different view of how the economy works.
John?
Okay.
All right, John. Thanks for your call. I'm sure it was no surprise, Governor. Let's go to Alicia in Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Governor Sean Parnell.
Hi, good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
So last week, Anglo American announced that they were pulling out of the Pebble Project and basically walking away from a $600 million investment. I was curious if you had a comment on that.
Okay, well, we did just mention that, but I'll
give him an,
we did. He essentially said, this is not the project we're going to concentrate right now. Go ahead.
Well, so I'm wondering, a global mining company spent over $600 million on a project in Alaska and walked away with nothing. And I'm just curious what you think that means about the state of investment climate in Alaska.
Well, it certainly sends a message that at least in the case of Pebble, that a company is going to have a struggle getting even into the permitting process. And that means there will be less investment in Alaska in that kind of activity. So, of course, I'm concerned when that happens because it actually has spillover into smaller areas and other industries. Shell, for example, in the offshore Arctic has invested more than $4 billion and has yet to be able to penetrate an oil or gas horizon. So certainly this, it causes some concern over a broader picture. We are where we are right now. And as Steve indicated, that my earlier comment was, I cannot invest time and effort in a Pebble permitting process when there isn't a company to come forward. So that's where I've left it at this point.
Thank you.
You bet.
All right, Alicia, thank you for your call. And Kathy in Sitka, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Governor Sean Parnell.
Thank you, Governor, for taking my call.
You bet.
So as a resident of Southeast Alaska, I want to know if the state has a monitoring system in place for the continuing radioactive threat to our fisheries that's coming from the Fukushima Daiichi plant?
We do, and it's actually something that DEC is watching closely with federal agencies, including NOAA and the EPA. So my understanding, and I've been given a short briefing on this in the last 3 weeks or so by our commissioner of DEC, Larry Hartig, who indicated that so far we have seen in our biological testing of fish, we've seen no evidence of that. And from our federal government contemporaries, including the military and the Homeland Defense Organization that looks over this because we want to make sure this doesn't happen on our shores as well, they've indicated they've not seen environmental contamination in the fish that are returning to Alaska. So it's an ongoing effort that our state agencies continue monitoring with federal agencies, but it's not something that has posed a risk to date.
Okay, thank you. I guess the thing that brings to mind is that we were just talking about how sustainable Alaska fisheries are. And, there are many threats to our fisheries. There's climate change, there's invasive species, there's genetically modified salmon. But I don't hear a lot of people talking about the fact that the reactors are still leaking or that Japan has not been called to task to really get this thing under control over 2 years later.
I think your point's valid, and it's definitely a concern. I can also tell you that U.S. federal authorities that I've spoken with in the last 2 weeks in Homeland Security and in defense are looking at ways to not only monitor what's happening there, but make sure that never happens on our shores as well in the lower 48 or in Alaska.
Okay.
Thank you
for your response.
You bet. Thank you.
All right, Kathy. Thank you for your call. Governor, I think I'll give you a chance to take up the strategic position of Alaska in world affairs these days because the Arctic ice pack is a little bit restored this year, but most scientists believe there's a downward trend that's going to continue, and we're seeing more and more shipping traffic up through there. The Navy doesn't really tell us what it does up there, but I know it goes up there.
Yeah.
And You know, we've got a border dispute with Canada for the whole offshore sector in the Mackenzie Delta and over in there that we both think we own that offshore land where there could very well be some massive hydrocarbon deposits. It would seem that Alaska is the only Arctic state, and that its profile is kind of rising, don't you think?
It is, and in the last couple of weeks, I've had a chance to visit the Northern Command and NORAD in outside Colorado Springs, and they're responsible for homeland defense. So they're General Chuck Jacoby, who's a former U.S. Army Alaska commander. So he's lived here with his wife Grace, knows Alaska, knows Alaskans. He's heading up the defense of the homeland, and that trip really made clear to me some more of the threats we have on the international front and made me more committed than I already was to ensuring the defense of Alaska. So how much more time do we have? Do we have a minute or two here at least?
Yeah, I'm going to take a break in a minute or two. Yeah.
Okay, I'd love to want to talk some more about this because our focus and our nation's focus in the Arctic has been primarily on environmental spill prevention and response. It's been somewhat focused on the new economic potential with maritime commerce. But in order to have a system that even works in those areas, you've got to have national security and national defense. And when our western shores and northern shores are more open with diminished sea ice, particularly in the summer months, we have moments where we have to ensure the defense of Alaska. Want to make sure that we have that we not fall back our fighter forces to J-Bear, you know, the F-16s from Eielson. Want to make sure that they don't have an extra 40 minutes of flight time to meet any aggressor on the western or northern shores. These are important topics that we don't usually think about, but with diminished sea ice, we need to be able to protect our airspace, protect from the sea, and protect under the sea. One of those ways that we do that as a state is we partner with the federal government. So, for example, we spent $80 million as a state on the Tanana River Bridge so that the military could have access to the premier training area in America. Well, we need a port on the western shore of Alaska, say, for example, at Port Clarence near Nome. As a state, we're willing to invest money in that infrastructure, you know, to bring a Coast Guard presence there. They're willing. I've talked with the Commandant, Admiral Papp, about that possibility. The question is, how can we work together in this declining fiscal environment from the federal government when, you know, they're really working to cut Department of Defense? I want to make sure they do it in a way that still protects Alaska, as we are a gateway to North America. We're American citizens. We deserve protection, but we're also strategically placed to protect the rest of North America, and we ought to act like it as a federal government.
So we might see a budget line item someplace involving Port Clarence, maybe?
Well,
so
we already have. For example, we studied Port Clarence and Cape Blossom near Kotzebue for a port, and both the federal government and the state studies have concluded that there's probably deeper water, better conditions at Clarence, Port Clarence right now. Those issues and the land challenges, port challenges, money—it all remains to be resolved. But you know, we need a presence in the Arctic. We don't need to have all of our military might, at least from the air, fall back to Anchorage. I was kind of heartened by General Carlisle's comments. Hawk Carlisle made the comment at an Air Force conference that he didn't believe that any of the Pacific bases would suffer cutbacks. So that's a hopeful sign, but it's not a final decision yet. And you know, we're going to continue fighting to make sure that we have our defense.
Governor Sean Parnell is our guest. Telephone number 1-800-478-8255. Best of luck on that. All the phone lines are jammed up. Email talk@alaskapublic.org as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. And by ERA. For more than 40 years, ERA Alaska's planes have carried the stories of Alaska. ERA Alaska, bringing Alaskans together. More at flyera.com.
Governor Sean Parnell is our guest. It's Talk of Alaska, and we Prince of Wales Island is weighing in. Larry in Klawak, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Oh, well, thank you, gentlemen. I have a question about road closures. I don't know if you're too familiar with that, Governor, on the Tongass here.
It's Forest Service, though, right?
No, there's Forest Service land, which is much worse at it than you. However, they don't close all the roads at the state. The state closes all the roads. When they put in a timber sale, they build a road in, the timber's taken, and on their way out, they pull the bridges, pull the culverts, and, you know, just make the road impassable after that. And
That's a federal requirement, I believe, but I will check that because I've been outraged by that myself. Actually, I believe I saw it happen on Prince of Wales about, I don't know, it's been a number of years now, but had that described to me, and I will check that because I appreciate you raising that, putting it on my radar again.
Yeah, okay. Well, like I said, the Forest Service is a lot worse at it. They've got a lot more road here, but like I said, they do leave a lot of roads open, and you know, it just eliminates the possibility of small business subsistence and you know, forest restoration, things like that you're going to need a road for.
Yeah,
and I'm sure that, you know, you'll get the standard line that we can't afford to keep roads open.
No, I disagree with that sentiment. I share your sentiment, your view. So
Larry, you definitely put it on his radar. I can see it.
I wrote it down. So
thanks, Larry, for your call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks.
Now down to Valdez and Matt. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Governor Parnell, Matt.
Yeah, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Governor. Hey, I wanted to ask you about the TV show that I saw about a year ago. I don't watch TV, but I saw the show called Alaska State Troopers.
Yeah.
And I just want to express to you how humiliating and embarrassing that show is for the state of Alaska, especially seems to be consistently highlighting our problems with alcohol and drugs and, you know, kind of making a little bit of money on it or something like that. But I guess I'm asking you, Governor, to reevaluate whether or not we need to have the state of Alaska involved in that type of media exposure. Thank you.
Well, thank you. You know, that's something I had never considered. In fact, in my travels outside of Alaska, that's one of the shows that people refer to as saying they enjoy it and they want to come see Alaska. But I've not heard that perspective before, and I appreciate it. So thank you. I'll give that some consideration. Hadn't thought about it in that way.
Think it does look bad.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of Alaska programs, and some of them don't paint us in the most favorable light. And I can understand how your last caller, Matt, would think that.
And this one by email from Jock up in Talkeetna. He says, you know that King Salmon have been tracked all the way up through the proposed dam site to within 10 miles of the glacier. King Salmon. I know the DNR might not agree with that, but that's what he's saying. And he's saying, so why not build a gas pipeline rather than build a high dam on a silty river with a serious geological hazard that would wipe out a King Salmon run?
Well, I think that's why the Alaska Energy Authority and its contractors have been doing the salmon studies to determine that. That's, frankly, it'd probably be better if you had somebody from AEA come in to address what those studies have found and what the process looks like to deal with that concern.
Yeah, and we probably will be coming back to that.
Okay.
Donna in Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Governor Sean Parnell.
Thank you. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
I've been an Alaska resident for, it'll be 40 years. Well, it was 40 years this month. And one of my, I certainly appreciate your emphasis on sexual assault and domestic violence and their victims. But if $20 million of victim services money comes in through the state of Alaska, 97% of that goes to this sexual assault and domestic violence. And there are a number of victims of violent crime that do not have any agency like a victim of domestic violence does. The only agency that really works with victims of violent crime that are not domestic violence is the Victims for Justice. And we're concerned that all of the emphasis from your office is going to that one group of victims and nothing else is going to any of the victims of homicide and their families, robberies, DWI, accidents. All of those kinds of things are not getting much assistance.
Hmm.
Okay, Donna, I want to ask you one thing. The restitution process is working okay, isn't it? I mean, you don't see a problem with that, have you? If they find the perpetrator and they do restitution, I mean, that money does get back to the victims.
Through the Crime Victims Compensation
Eventually it does, yes.
Yeah.
But there is no agency besides the one that I'm familiar with that actually helps a victim of a horrendous crime work their way through the system and get assistance. They go to court with them. They provide a lot of assistance. And not housing, not long-term training and things like that, but they follow with the victim through the whole system. Mm. And in particular, Victims for Justice.
Good.
I
want to leave some time for the governor to answer. Okay. You have about a minute and a half.
Okay.
Well, I share the perspective that there's no way to fully compensate a victim of a crime or a survivor of a crime, whether it's a domestic violence situation, whether it's an assault, whether it's a murder. So to address that, we have an imperfect system that provides money. So through the Crime Victims Compensation Commission, for example, from the PFD Felons Fund, Victims for Justice is a organization that certainly has done good work. It's certainly work that I've supported both legislatively and in the governor's office. We have an Office of Victims Advocacy as well that's constitutionally mandated. So we can always do more. And I just want to make that commitment to your listeners that we'll continue to work on that. And again, there's my heart goes out to the families and victims themselves who experience.
So it sounds like you would be open to if there's navigators for domestic violence victims and not other victims, you're at least willing to look at that.
Of course, I am. It's we have domestic violence, sexual assault is such a huge epidemic in our state that I chose to address that because that's a huge issue as well.
All right, thank you very much.
You bet.
Governor Sean Parnell has been our guest. Thanks so much to Dave Waldron and Josh Edge. And thanks to you, the listeners. And I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Providence Imaging Center, with Drs. Scott Nespinski and Christopher Reed, providing interpretations of imaging studies with a focus on musculoskeletal radiology, provimaging.com. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has studied regional population, household, and employment statistics to forecast future traffic and revenue models for the Kinnick Arm Crossing. The authority is updating this data and commissioning an independent peer review of the work that's been completed so far. The results are expected in fall 2013. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.